Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Monday, April 26, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed your weekend. Title of today's podcast, Youth Revolts Coming. This, I believe, is more of a statement as opposed to a question. I think, in large part, they're already here. They have been here. We witnessed a lot of these revolts, which typically are led by younger people. That's historically the standard. And we covered this at length in 2019, which is important to note and to remind the audience of this fact from time to time, because it occurred before COVID-19. It occurred before the pandemic. It occurred before the lockdowns and the restrictions and the basic man-made government economic collapse. So why were people protesting? Why were they rioting, depending on the country, depending on the city, depending where you were? Why was this a global occurrence before 2020, before the pandemic? It's because the global economy was weakening, which is something we talked about at length throughout 2019, that it was all smoke and mirrors, that the game was over. And unfortunately, the power brokers, your central bankers, your federal governments, really put the pedal to the metal once again, and they're pulling it off. They're pulling off an even bigger smoke and mirror show. And to be quite honest, it surprises me. It surprises me that so many people continue to buy into it. Because you could argue, all right, during the great financial crisis, this was an experiment. It was supposed to be transitory, yada, yada, yada. Let's give these guys a chance, these central bankers, these governments pulling these things out of the hat, pulling them out of the air, making this stuff up. All right, let's see. It's so bad, the GFC, the worst economic financial crisis we've seen since the Great Depression. Let's give these guys a chance with quantitative easing and all this other stuff they're throwing out there. It's only going to be temporary, right? No, of course not. But we bought into it. We've been doing it now for over a decade. It's basically a teenager now. No end in sight. In fact, it's gotten worse, and it's probably going to get even worse from here. It's the dirty open secret when you watch the financial media, but rarely is it discussed at length. I would love to be a financial journalist just for a day on one of these shows, a host, or somebody who's able to ask some of these guests some questions. Why do you have a job? Why do you work on Wall Street? What type of research or analysis are you doing? Don't you understand that it's just the central banks printing money? It's just federal governments borrowing and begging for money and throwing it into the system? What are you doing? Why do you have to conduct any analysis? I wish somebody would have the balls to ask those questions, because I would just like to hear the answers. What are the responses? And of course, they'll dance around it. And people just have a fundamental misunderstanding, too, of the marketplace, too. So it's a bit of a dichotomy. Some people just don't understand. Some people do, but of course, their living depends on it, so they want to play dumb. Or, you know, well, it's not that big of a deal. We don't really have to worry about inflation, or we really don't have to worry about more lockdowns or restrictions or this, that. We're just going to continue with the narrative. Whatever they tell us, the government, Federal Reserve, the ECB, whatever they tell us, we're just going to go with it, and we'll just modify our portfolios accordingly. So I think you have people who just fundamentally don't understand what's going on, misinterpret it, and those who do but won't admit to it because their livelihoods depend on it, right? Because that goes to the question, what are you doing? You're not managing much money. I mean, the Fed's just buying stuff and there it goes. Throw it into the system, there we go. Until it doesn't. But you don't have many people coming on these stations and telling you about the concerns, the leverage in the system, the unknowns within the system, like we saw a couple of weeks ago with Archegos Capital. All of those billion-dollar losses amongst several banks across the world, okay? That was just one small family office, relatively speaking. Now, you would have to be insane to not think that that isn't going to blow up somewhere else, in a bigger hedge fund, in a bigger bank, in some other big institution, like we witnessed during the Great Financial Crisis. Nobody truly understood those relationships, those deals, amongst and between all of these other parties. And that's why liquidity came to a screeching halt. Because nobody trusted anybody, because they all knew that they were making bad deals with somebody else. And they said, well, if we made a bad deal, that guy probably made a bad deal, and down the line you went. I am expecting something like that to happen again. And that could just be a point of system exhaustion. But all of this stuff that we are witnessing and experiencing, it's all smoke and mirrors. There isn't any great pent-up demand out there. Are people anxious to get out? Yeah, this is just delayed spending. You didn't go on vacation last year. You're going to take one this year. Okay, you're going to take two vacations. You're going to take three vacations. You didn't go out to eat last year very often. What are you going to do? How many times are you going to go this time? You're going to buy 10 dinners every time you go to make up for it? That's not how it works. You didn't go to your barber or your hairstylist every month or however frequently you go. What are you going to do? Go two times a month, three times a month to make up for it? No, that's not how it works. It's just delayed spending. But as we are witnessing with our trade deficits, they are the largest in history or near it. We're not the ones producing the stuff. Other countries are. Because not a lot of people are going back to work yet. Because they have been conditioned. This is basically our universal basic income that has been implemented over the past year, year and a half now. Just send the people money. Whether or not they need it, just give it to them. That's your sit down and shut up money. Don't forget that either. And that's part, I think, because governments understand the youth revolts are coming. So take your money, sit down and shut up. Don't protest us. Don't call for massive change, which is desperately needed across our system. There are some things that are fundamentally sound. There are others built on top of that foundation which are just absurd on their face. They shouldn't even exist to begin with, but they do. And people around the globe are starting to wake up. I've been saying it for over 2 years now. Revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. And we're going to get to that a little bit later when we go through market performance and some of the commodity prices. Because one of the things that I'm talking about here today is down in Chile, they are shutting down some of their mining operations, big copper mines down there, because those people are on the brink of collapse. They are running out of their personal savings. They wanted the ability to tap into their pension funds, which would be for the third time now. Okay? And they were shut down to do so for the third time. Well, the government doesn't have enough money, doesn't have enough resources down there to continue giving the people a bunch of funny money like Uncle Sam does here in the States. So the people are protesting, shutting down mines. Well, that's a copper mine. Big supply of copper comes from Chile. So as you can imagine, the prices of copper, which have already been trending upward for the past several months, are continuing to move higher. There's no inflation. I mean, copper isn't used for anything, right? That's not going to go into anybody's new home building or any other type of construction. It's not going to go into all of these new electric vehicles, which are going to need more copper and all of these materials. There's going to be an excessive amount of mining that's going to have to take place to satiate the demand for electric vehicles. But if you were to ask an environmentalist, what's one of the biggest problems, what's one of the biggest concerns, or what's one of the biggest contributing factors to environmental destruction, in their opinion, that leads to the climate crisis? I guarantee you, in the top five, mining operations would be in their top five answers. Mining operations. Do they understand how much more mining is going to have to take place to get all of these materials out of the ground so all of these auto manufacturers, which are just coming out of the woodwork globally, all over the place. I mean, you have Apple contemplating getting into the automaker space. Okay, you got a bunch of Chinese tech companies also getting into it too. You understand how much material there's going to be? And then the extra materials for the solar panels and the wind turbines. But somehow this doesn't compute with these people. They don't get it. Or they just simply say, well, I guess that's what we're just going to have to deal with. But I've never heard them say that. I would like them pressed on that too. All of this quote-unquote green technology, you're going to have to really pollute the environment, according to you, because of all of these extra mining operations that are going to have to take place to extract all of these metals and rare earth elements. Okay? So getting back to Chile, and that was a country, if you recall, during 2019, they were on the list of people who were protesting before, as were several other South American and Latin American countries, because they're fed up with the system. They couldn't take a simple tax increase. They couldn't take a simple increase to the price of diesel or gasoline. They couldn't take an increase in a fare to get on a bus or on the subway system. So you never know what that final straw is going to be. But rest assured, it's at the intersection of economics, politics, and social issues. And we're going to continue to see a lot more. And I'm going to read an article, parts of it, when it comes to a youth revolt forming and taking shape in South Korea, which is one of the largest economies on the planet. And again, you go to the weakest links, it starts to make its way down the chain. You're going to start getting bigger economies into the mix. We have further lockdowns in Japan, in Tokyo and Osaka. You have the rising cases in India and the subsequent lockdowns. And we talked about that a little bit last week and how Prime Minister Modi is, you know, he's sort of straddling the line there. Yeah, cases are up. People are going to hospitals. It's becoming overwhelming for them. But the economic situation, can they tolerate it? Because they were already, as so many other economies were prior to the pandemic, they were already rolling over. Politicians don't want to be responsible for economic decay, decline, collapse. They also don't want to be held responsible for any type of public health issue either, but that's the line these politicians are straddling. You had some global protests take place over the weekend too. People are sick and tired of the lockdowns and restrictions. Rightly so. It's spring, summer's around the bend. People want to get outside. They can understand maybe in 2020 this thing was new. We understand it. A lot of unknowns. Okay, we'll give you a break. But now you are really trampling on our movement, on our liberty, on our ability to live. And people are simply sick and tired of it. So there's going to be pushback. There's going to be a lot of pushback. And we'll get to that story momentarily. Some market performance news. We got the Bank of Japan holding rates, which is no surprise, and they also cut their 2021 inflation forecast. So the BOJ left its key short-term interest rate unchanged at a negative 10 basis points and kept the target for the 10-year Japanese government bond yield at around 0%. Oh boy, you're going to make a lot of money there. And the central bank slashed its consumer inflation forecast for fiscal year 2021 to 0.1% from earlier predictions of a 0.5% gain amid downward pressure on service spending. So they might be attributing this to further lockdowns and restrictions that they're seeing. But of course, Japan has been in this type of situation for quite a while. Dollar index is at 90.93 in the green overnight session. Bitcoin, $53,400 a coin. It was down over the weekend. I think it hit around 48,000 when I saw it. I don't know if it went lower than that, but that was sort of the low I saw over the weekend. But right now, Bitcoin, again, $53,400 a coin. And not too much movement in the overnight Forex exchange, Forex market. Index front here, U.S., well, all-time highs with the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. Why? Well, why not? Because the Federal Reserve's balance sheet hit $7.82 trillion last week, as we discussed last Thursday, $7.82 trillion, an all-time high. For context, for perspective, Great Financial Crisis, their balance sheet was just shy of $900 billion. Again, this was just transitory, folks. It was just going to be temporary. Okay, almost a tenfold increase, and we will be at a tenfold increase by the end of this year, because the Fed remains committed to $120 billion per month at minimum to purchase treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Okay, you get this? Even though the housing market is supposedly hotter than ever before, housing prices at all-time highs, so where's the crisis? What's the problem? Isn't that good? Isn't that what they always say? Higher prices are good, but there's no inflation. Isn't that good news? So why do they continue to purchase mortgage-backed securities? We are still contending with the great financial crisis, as I like to repeat here all the time. We never got out of it. We are still in it. That's what quantitative easing continues to do. And now with the pandemic, with the market sell-off that took place, well, what are they doing? They're justifying the unjustifiable. And these actions are going to lead and contribute to this movement of youth revolts. Because young people are waking up. Young people know it instinctively that they are going to have to pay for all of this nonsense. They're not benefiting from it. They're not benefiting from it at all, really. And they understand that they are going to pay the biggest costs, the biggest prices, the lack of opportunity, all of the extra taxation that they're going to have to pay, whether direct taxes or through the inflation tax. The piper gets paid. And young people know that they're going to be the ones paying the bulk of it in one form or another. And most likely the triple whammy of direct taxation, inflation, and lost opportunity. And that's already being experienced. And depending what country you're in, that's obviously going to pave the way to see how fanatical it might get in some countries. I think it's going to get nasty in a lot of countries around the globe. I don't see how it cannot, given history. I hope that's not the case. There have been times, and there have been many instances as well, of peaceful protests, and there just being enough political stress on the system and a big enough movement that can really affect positive change. And even with those types of changes that I think will come, just meaning governments being replaced, overthrown, again, hopefully peacefully, through the ballot box, but I still have concern as to what is adopted on the other side, because there's still a lot of belief by young people, unfortunately, that socialism and communism, or some variation thereof, is the answer, or should be a part of the solution, and a big part of the solution. Of course, that is just going to be a larger contributing factor to a bigger problem. That is not the cure. That is very much a part of the disease. That is very much a contributing factor to what we are experiencing now, this merger between big governments and big business all over the place. This nepotism, this cronyism, this fraud, this abuse of the system. The two-tier justice system. You're walking across the street, you're jaywalking, and they lock you up. You attempt to launder money, they lock you up, throw away the key. Yet big banks, they do it every single day to the tunes of millions, billions of dollars in aggregate. And not a word. And if there is a word, it's a deferred prosecution agreement. Slap on the wrist, pay a fine, nobody goes to jail, go about your business. People are starting to wake up to this. People are starting to see it. And a lot of governments and central bankers are getting extremely bold and arrogant. I say that's an extremely dangerous combination to have their level of incompetence and arrogance combined. Their incompetence is bad enough as it is. Combining it with arrogance now is really insulting, but you're really starting to see their true colors. Like we saw with Christine Lagarde, the president of the ECB, coming out a few weeks ago, as we mentioned, saying markets bring it on. Bring it on. We got a printing press, is what she's saying. So if you think you're going to put downward pressure on these markets, yeah, go ahead, knock yourself out. We're going to fight you tooth and nail. Don't fight us. We're going to beat you. But with all of this funny money, well, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 eked out another all-time closing high. No surprise there. And, of course, the Federal Reserve meets this week as well. Their FOMC meeting will start tomorrow. It will conclude on Wednesday, and we will have that discussion as well. And also, our demented president, unfortunately, will be having a speech before a joint session of Congress. I will watch it just for the purpose of the podcast, like I stated last week. Not looking forward to it, but I will watch it. But nonetheless, overnight futures trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ 100, all in the green but relatively flat. The cash trade in Japan is currently in the red, down about 0.2%. Markets in Europe, well, all up for the day. And the Australian cash trade is in the red, down 0.2%. Chinese stocks also in the red, down 0.5%. On the commodity front, WTI, $62.26 a barrel. Brent, $66.01. Natural gas, $2.79. Gold and silver, gold at $1,780 an ounce. Silver, $26.16. And copper, as I had just stated previously, $4.47 a pound. So getting closer to $4.50 a pound. Off the back of some of this news with the Chilean miners on strike. No inflation. Now, this isn't, don't worry about it. There's no inflation. Nothing to see here. The economy is booming. Everybody, if they want a job, they can get a job. There's no problem. There wasn't a problem with the trillion-dollar forecast beforehand. There wasn't a problem with the revolts and the protests and the riots beforehand. Everything is perfectly fine. Take your vaccine. Take it 20 times. So however many times you want to take it. Your body, your choice. Pop pills. Do whatever you want. There's no problem. Put your head in the sand. Everything is perfectly fine. Of course, I am being sarcastic. But that's what they'll tell you. Despite what you're looking at, despite the numbers that flash before your face on the screen with one commodity after the next, with one good after the next, with your grocery bill, your utility bill, your insurance rates, everything. Oh, it's all going up, but there's no inflation. You don't have to worry about anything. People are waking up. They can only tolerate it for so long. They can only be told that there's no inflation or it's only transitory or this, that, or the other for so long. Until they say, this doesn't make sense. I'm looking at this piece of paper. I'm looking at this bill. I'm looking at that bill. And that's a big increase. That ain't 2%. That's not 1.5%. That's not 0.5% increase. That's 10%, 15%, 30%. There are big increases that people are experiencing that's affecting their pocketbook. Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note, 1.58%, 1.58%, so it remains range-bound. So I hope this question is asked of Jerome Powell, Chair of the Federal Reserve, on Wednesday. I'm sure it will be. And that question is, this recent consolidation within the 10-year yield, which I just mentioned, 1.58%, is this some sort of de facto yield curve control? What's going on here? Is this where you want it? Do you feel comfortable with 1.58%? Why 1.58%? Are you doing anything to sort of control these rates at this point? Or is this just what the market's doing? Is it sort of just in a wait-and-see pattern, waiting for the FOMC decision? Which, of course, is going to be no change. It's going to be no change. They're going to hold rates where they are. They're going to remain committed to $120 billion a month, at least, of their quantitative easing experiment. So I don't understand why everybody's concerned. What's the problem? Everything's great. Everything is great. And this sort of goes to something I was listening to Ben Shapiro a little bit earlier this afternoon. And he was talking about Joe Biden. Obviously, the lead up to his speech before Congress this week. And some, I guess, recent polling numbers. I'm not interested in the polling data and this, that, or the other. But his point was, he thought the polling numbers should have been higher than what they are. Because Ben Shapiro was saying, well, the economy is on fire. The stock market is on fire. There's going to be 8% GDP growth, blah, 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 blah. Well, what Mr. Shapiro fails to understand, obviously, is that this is not real growth. This is all borrowed money. This is all printed funny money. This is not real. This is the smoke and mirror show that I am talking about. And he has a huge audience. This is a disservice to that audience, in my opinion. This is not based off of production. This is based off of a printing press being turned on full bore. That needs to be understood. Again, people understand it instinctively, intuitively. They understand that something's wrong. They might not understand where it's coming from, but they understand the effects because they're witnessing it. They're experiencing it. And as I've been saying here for months, you give me several trillion dollars, I'll show you a good time too. It's all temporary. This is not a solid foundation. And when this thing crumbles, and it will, it's going to be devastating. As I stated last week, it's going to be a triple whammy. That's what we are setting ourselves up for. The triple whammy of 1929, 1930s Great Depression, because of our trade wars, our fiscal policy as a response to this, the lead up to the dot-com bust. So you got that whole boom, this fascination with the tech sector again, can't go down. And cryptocurrencies can't go down. And then the great financial crisis with all the real estate once again. And of course, rents are going up too. It's not just the housing prices. People can't get into a home. Well, they got to live somewhere. So unless you want to get into a tent, and unfortunately, a lot of people coast to coast are deciding to live in a tent because they can't afford anything, which takes us to South Korea. A youth revolt is underway. The first issue that turned public opinion against President Moon of South Korea and his government was the catastrophic housing crisis in the Seoul metropolitan area, the Seoul being the capital city of South Korea. Apartment prices in Seoul have soared by 58% during Moon's presidency. Rents in the city have also shot up, leaving millions of people, especially young people in their 20s and 30s who have extremely limited savings, struggling to make ends meet. Gee, I wonder why they don't have any savings. Lack of opportunity. And if you try to put your money into a bank, you're not going to get anything on your money. Because we have to do an emergency policy for the past 13 years. But everything's great. Yet, then why do we need the emergency policy? See, basic stuff. Nobody asks these questions. To ease the city's housing crisis, the government introduced a cap on rent increases. But this move backfired, as it usually does, when it was revealed that many high-ranking Democratic Party officials increased the rents for the apartments they own in Seoul before the rent control bill came into effect. Aren't politicians the best? Doesn't matter where you are, folks. These are just the best people on the planet. Let's see here. Kim Song-jo, President Moon's policy chief in charge of the country's economic and social policies, including real estate market measures, for example, was sacked for imposing a 14% rent increase on his apartment just 2 days before the passing of a new law that set a 5% cap on rent increases. What a nice guy. The ruling party lawmaker, Park Jung-min, who drafted the rent control bills, was also found to have imposed rent hikes on his apartment before the law's passage. Many other government officials were also found to have benefited from the crisis through rent hikes and land speculation. In March this year, for example, it has been revealed that at least 20 employees of the Korean Land and Housing Corporation, the government agency in charge of building new towns and housing, are under investigation for using privileged information to cash in on government housing development programs. Well, doesn't that sound like our senators and congressmen here in the U.S. front-running what was taking place with COVID-19, with all of the behind-the-scenes information they had before it became public? It's just great. This is what these people are doing. They front-ended the law. They knew it was going to pass. They knew the president was going to sign it into existence. So, well, we're going to cap it at 5%. Oh, well, before it comes into effect, let's jack up the rent prices. That's how they treat their people. That's how our politicians treat us, too. They treat us like idiots, and they get away with it because they give us money. They give us money because they know bribes work. Because they take bribes. It works for them, so they figure, well, it works for us. Our lobbyists, you know, people who lobby us, they give us money, special interests, unions, big corporations. They give us money, and then we do what they want. Well, how about we give money to the voters, and then maybe they'll do what we want? That's exactly what's taking place. It's the sit down and shut up money. It's the pass through bailout that we have been through for the past year, going on year and a half. And now you got Tweedledee and Tweedledum in the White House. They want to push even more spending. We are on track to spend $8 trillion this year alone. Our deficit is going to be larger than the tax revenues that we bring in. Okay, we're going to have a $4.3 trillion deficit, if not greater. We bring in $3.5 trillion in tax revenue across all sources. So why do we have taxes? Because clearly it's not any type of constraint. So now it's the infrastructure. It's the quote-unquote human infrastructure. Who knows what these people are going to come up with next? I told you, they're just getting started. Just getting started. And that was another funny thing to hear from Ben Shapiro, too. It's funny to hear how the conservatives start dancing when it's the other party in charge, which I always like to point out here. It's okay when their side runs trillion-dollar deficits, evidently, when their economy is smoke and mirrors, when the stock market is being jolted higher because of money printing under that administration, but as soon as it becomes the other side, oh, well, we can't tolerate this type of spending. Listen, that's another thing that's going to drive all young people all over the place crazy. They're getting tired of the hypocrisy. It's so obvious. You can't miss it. Unless you really are blind, deaf, and dumb. Young people need to make a stand. I pray that it's peaceful. Done through the ballot box. Done through various initiatives. Joining forces. I just hope at the end of the day that if proven successful, that these systems can be alleviated of these quote-unquote leaders, that the right policies are adopted. And that should be equal justice under law and free market capitalism. If that's the case, our best days are ahead of us. If it isn't, then it's going to be a dark winter. Because we cannot continue with these policies under a different name. Or we can't say, well, we tried this before, or some old-timer tried this before, but now I'm here, so let's try the socialism and communism under me, because I'm young, and I'm smarter than them old-timers, so let's do that. Not going to work. Not going to work. We have to be very careful that we don't fall into that trap. So with that, pay very close attention to these global developments, because it's not just here in the United States. It's everywhere. It's the weakest links. It's bigger economies. It's gaining momentum. Central bankers, federal governments know it. That's why they're doing what they're doing. They know the game is over. They know they're trapped. But nobody wants to be responsible because there is no global leadership. And that's needed now, maybe more than ever. So pay attention. Youth revolts are coming. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.